I call this meeting the House Military Veterans Affairs to order. It's 1:01 p.m. on Tuesday, March 5th. We're in the Gruenberg Room in the State Capitol. Present with me, I have Representative Shaw, Representative Carpenter, Representative Groh, Representative Gray, and myself, Chair Wright. Let the record reflect, we do have a quorum to conduct business. First off, I'd like to thank Ms. Talia Ames, a veteran herself, with the Juno LIO, moderating today's meeting. Thank you, Talia. Also, Ms. Lori Rowland with House Records. Thank you for documenting today's meeting. We have three items on the agenda today. First, HB 228, Mental Health Psychedelic Medical Task Force. This is our third hearing on this bill. We have a new version after amending the bill. And the previous version, I'll see you here. So I'd like to entertain a motion.
Thank you, Chairman Wright. I move that the committee adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 228-33-LS-0976-P as in Papa as a working document.
Object for discussion.
Thank you for the objection. My committee aide, Mr. Forrest Wolf, will now go over the changes.
All right. Thank you. And to the chair, members of the committee, Forrest Wolf, for the record, staff to Representative Wright. Really quickly to recap the changes we made last week with the two amendments, the first being on page 2, following line 24, we're inserted a new paragraph to read subsection 9, one member representing psychiatric nurse practitioners selected by the Board of Directors of the Alaska Advanced Practice Registered Nurse Alliance, and then renumbers the following paragraphs accordingly. Change number 2. On page 1, line 8, we deleted the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development and inserted the legislature, which is going to be make this a legislative task force. Also noted of note is it reduced the fiscal note to zero, which we did just receive earlier today, should be distributed to you, and it's also on basis. Final change was the concept amendment from Representative Sadler. Page 3, line 3 in subsection C, we're deleting that the line that reads, the task force shall elect a chair from among its members, and inserting the members appointed by the President of the Senate and Speaker of the House of Representatives under B11 and 12 of the section shall serve as the co-chairs of the task force. And those are the changes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf.
I remove my objection.
Thank you. Hearing no further objection, version P is before the committee. Are there any final questions from the committee for the bill sponsor?
Also,
we do have the Deputy Commissioner from DCCED, Ms. Michaela Fowler, if there are any questions. Thank you for being here. Seeing no further questions, I will look to the will of the committee.
Chairman Wright, I move that we report the House Bill 228-33-LS-0976-P as in Papa from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Hearing no objections, House Bill 228 is reported from committee. We will now take a brief at ease to sign the committee report. House Military Veterans Affairs is back on record. Next on the agenda is HB 312, Assistant Adjutant General Appointment by request of the Governor. This is our second hearing on the bill. My office received no amendments, so the bill is back before the committee. Are there any final questions from the committee members for the bill sponsor? Seeing none, I would look to the committee for the will.
Thank you, Chairman Wright. I move that we report House Bill 312-33-GH-2609-A-alpha from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Hearing no objection, House Bill 312 is reported from committee. We will now take a brief at ease to sign the committee report. Also, I'd like to, for the record, recognize Representative Rouser. House Military Veterans Affairs is back on record. I also would like to recognize Representative Sadler for the record. Our last item on the agenda is a presentation from the Alaska Air Guard, Department of Military Veterans Affairs, on Program Element Code Leveling Initiative. With us present today, we have Brigadier General Brian Cowell. He is on the line. He is the Assistant Adjutant General for the Air National Guard, and we also have Ms. Angela LaFlamme, Legislative Liaison for the Department of Military Veterans Affairs. Ms. LaFlamme, General Kyle, please put yourselves on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Committee. My name is Angela LaFlamme. I'm the Legislative Liaison for the Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And as Chair Wright mentioned, with me online is Brigadier General Brian Kyle. He's the Alaska Air National Guard Assistant Adjutant General and Commander of the Guard. Today, we are just here to raise some awareness about a National Guard Bureau Air National Guard Leadership Initiative that's happening nationwide that is going to significantly impact the Alaska Air National Guard and many of the 24/7 operations that we perform here in support of Alaska and our nation. So with that, I will turn it over to Brigadier General Kyle to give you some more information.
Learning for the record, Brigadier General Brian Kyle, Commander of the Alaska Air National Guard. Just to fill you in on some what's going on nationally, the Air National Guard is performing a program element code leveling, where they're working to make every state and every program element code in each state the same percentage of funded full-time employment authorities. When they did this, when they executed this, they simply looked at a spreadsheet and moved numbers and digits around and didn't take into consideration location and mission. And because of that, Alaska is significantly impacted. They will be removing 80 AGRs from the state and replacing that with 84 technician positions. And what that sounds like, it's a win for Alaska. It's actually the opposite. So the understanding the difference between the two positions, AGR is very similar to an active duty military position. They get the same pay rate, pay scale. They get the same medical benefits, housing benefits, COLA, all the things that come along with being a full-time military member. Technician position, however, is slightly different. It's a, in some cases, civilian, in some cases, linked military position, paid on a different scale, significantly different benefits, and not as attractive as AGR. So when we talk about replacing AGRs with technicians, it's not going to be a one-for-one. The folks leaving the AGR, the amount of pay cut and benefits lost to that member is going to cause them to look elsewhere for employment. The biggest part and the part that I want to raise the most awareness to is to our full-time mission sets. So we have four 24/7 full-time missions here in the state of Alaska. Start with, we do space surveillance warning and ballistic missile warning at Clear Air Force Station. They're taking five positions out of there, which would degrade that mission to the point where we're calling it mission failure. But it, really what it is Alaska Guard will no longer be able to provide 100% coverage on that. So that's the first mission set. Second, we have Air Defense Squadron down in Jay Bear, and they watch the skies. They let us know when the Bear bombers are getting close, and all the balloon incident, everything that happens in the aerospace realm. Right now, they're losing 11 positions, and that we consider also mission failure. Be down to instead of 24/7 coverage, we'd be able to provide about 4 days worth of 24-hour coverage with lots of gaps in that, with that manpower structure. In the search and rescue area, we are losing, give you the right number here, 10 positions in search and rescue. The search and rescue, we sit alert for the fighter launches for air sovereignty missions, but we also, as a byproduct, do civilian search and rescue within the state of Alaska. Losing 10 positions there, we anticipate about a 50% degradation in mission capability, no longer be able to hold 24/7 alert, and the impact on the state would be of the 100 or so missions we do yearly, approximately 50% of them may not be covered by the Alaska Guard. And then the last mission is the aerial refueling tanker mission out of the 168th at Eielson. They're taking the most significant cut of any of our units. They're losing a total of 5 pilots without replacements. So they're going from 14 to 9 full-time authorities. There's no technician replacement for the AGRs they're losing. And that mission, losing that many pilots, they're not going to be able to maintain readiness, currency, giving check rides, training, all the things that go along with being prepared to, one, do the alert mission, and two, go to war. That unit is taking the largest hit of any unit in the nation. I guess pending your questions, that's the gist of the PEC leveling.
Thank you, General Kyle. Just before we get on with questions, I just had one myself. The alert, could you go into further detail on what the alert mission is, so folks have a clear understanding of it, how the importance of it is?
Yes, sir. So we have, like I said, we have 4 different alerts. The first is the search and rescue alert. It's 24/7 coverage covered by the 176 wing at J-Bear, where we provide an HC-130, an HH-60 helicopter, and Guardian Angel team consisting of pararescuemen and combat rescue officers. They sit 24/7 alert and launch within about an hour of mission notification. Their primary mission is to support fighter launch for an intercept, but their secondary mission is civilian search and rescue. So we prosecute approximately 100 missions per year of civilian search and rescue. We do anywhere in the last few years, 7 to 11 intercepts with the Russian aircraft into our ADIS. The other 2 alert missions that are ground-based, I'll go back to the air refueling alert is connected to the NORAD alert with the rescue. That one we launch and provide fuel and air refueling to the fighters so that they can get out to meet the bear bombers. That mission will not, the fighters don't have the legs to get as far out as we need to go if they don't have the air refueling capability of the KC-135. The 2 ground-based alert that we do, like I said, to start the ADA or the ACA alert, is our ADS squadron, and they watch the skies. They watch them for the balloons. They watch them for fighters launching out of Russia or anywhere else entering into the United States ADIS. And they're the ones that trigger the missions that the other 2, that the rescue and air refueling support. And then the last alert mission that we do is the space surveillance, and really that's intercontinental ballistic missile warning for North America, for Alaska, for the continental United States and Canada.
Thank you, General. So what I'm hearing is that this will affect the search and rescue for sure and other alert missions. when we critically need it. And when someone's out on the mountain, you need to think about that, everyone. So thank you. And I do have a question from Representative Rouser.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. Through the chair. So I was just wondering, so I identified some pretty stark items here, and I was just wondering, is there a fix on the horizon, and what is it?
And through the chair to Representative Rouser. So we're working with Guard Bureau. We're working with the combatant commanders and with our national CODEL one to stop this in its current form. There is not a direct fix in its current form. If they were to stop, if they were to adjust the PEC leveling as they rolled it out on January 10th, it would cause issues throughout the 54 states and territories on how they rolled it out. So they really need to put a stop to it in its current form, and then relook at it, look at mission impact, look at location, and take an actual critical look at these things before we roll out the leveling effort.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up?
Yeah, I was wondering, so is there anything that we can do, and what is it, if there is?
Sorry, through the chair, I did not hear the question.
I'm sorry, through the chair, I was wondering, if there anything that we can do, or is there anything, and if it is, what is it, and if there isn't, well, I appreciate you letting us know anyway.
Yes, sir. Through the chair, I think Angela might be better able to answer this, but I think we'd like to push a joint resolution through the state to stop, you know, stop this PEC leveling and readjust.
All right. Thank you very much.
Representative Sandler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. General Kyle, help me understand this PEC leveling. What's the motivation? I want to make sure I understand the process. Has this ever been applied before? Is this a cost saving? Is this some kind of bureaucratic rearrangement to arrive at some kind of unnecessary precision or alignment? You know, what is this and why?
Okay, through the chair. Yes, sir. So the intent behind this is to make every when you're talking. Program element codes, you're talking war fighting capabilities. And what Guard Bureau's thought process behind this is they want to be able to say, I want to send this, I'll use search and rescue as an example. I'd like to send this search and rescue to Afghanistan to fight. And if every rescue unit looks slightly different, they don't know exactly what they're going to get. So what they're trying to do is level throughout like position element codes to have everybody look the same so that when they task them, each one doesn't look different and we're not reinventing the wheel. So I applaud them. I think that is a good effort. However, like I said, they strictly looked at a spreadsheet, did not consider location, did not consider mission when they did this. I would say about 30 of the 54 are winners in this rollout, where they're actually gaining manpower and gaining active duty or AGR positions, losing technician positions, which is a win. From the director of the Air National Guard, he has stated that this is necessary because there's been a cap placed on Air National Guard as a whole. 25,333 is the cap. And he's looking to raise that or to remove the cap and then raise the number of AGRs to 31,200 in the Air National Guard to replace some of the technician workforce. And he has not had success at the national level doing that, which has brought him to this PEC level.
Follow up.
If you allow me through the chair to wax philosophical, in Greek mythology, there was the innkeeper Prometheus, Procrustes, who you lay down in his bed, and if you were too long, he'd stretch you, and if you were too too short stretch of, too long you cut off your head. This sounds like that kind of accommodation for consistency's sake. So I'll move that past that to a solution. Is there, in terms of the entire National Guard force nationwide, is there any provision for allocating the winners and losers such that we at least maintain the personnel who've gone through the training? In other words, if we're losing some people and we lose them in the Alaska Guard, will they go to some other net gain guard?
Yes, sir. Through the chair. Yes. So there is a zero sum game. There is no change in force numbers for the Air National Guard as a whole. It is rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. I'm sorry, that's not a good. They're just rearranging where they are. So, for example, Alaska, I said we're losing 80 AGRs. I think Ohio is gaining somewhere north of 80 AGRs and losing that many technicians. So it is simply rearranging full-time employment authorities to try to equal or level each program element code.
Follow up.
If I may follow up through the chair, General Kyle, what about our NORAD partners in the Canadian Defense Force? Do they have anything to say about this? Because they share a mission in Alaska. Is there any accommodation for how this is going to affect our international agreements and missions?
Through the chair, no. We have not engaged with Canada as of yet. So we are engaged with NORAD NORTHCOM, so indirectly with Canada. We've been engaged with ALCOM, 11th Air Force, General Nahom, General Gio at NORTHCOM, and then General Snyder at PAYCOM have been, we have been engaged with them looking to preserve, because the missions that we perform are their missions. The Alaska Air National Guard is simply performing the missions of Pacific Air Forces and NORTHCOM and NORAD. So we have gone to them to express that we will no longer be able to perform those missions, causing mission failure unless they make some changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think many of my questions were asked and answered already. I guess I just need to better understand in regards to the active component relying upon the reserve component to fulfill its mission. Does the active component have the capacity to pick up the slack where the reserve component may be curtailed in our AO?
Through the chair to Representative Carpenter. Sir, I think there is some capacity for them to pick up some of this. There's also some ability for them to provide MPA days, so manning days to help augment the technicians holding the alert. If it were to come through in its current form and we get technicians, we would have to put them in a different status to hold the alerts. They have some ability to provide us with man days to put those individuals on. Our biggest concern in that is that's a volunteer for a technician to change status and to move into a different status, and it affects their entitlements. It affects their retirement, their medical benefits, their pay, and what their family gets in those same entitlements. So it's not a very attractive formula for our current full-time guardsmen. As far as pulling active duty to do the missions we do, they have limited capacity in space and ADS. They have more capacity in air refueling and rescue to pull forces from somewhere else to do the alert.
Thank you.
Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, an observation and then a question. So as a former Guard soldier myself, I could never tell the difference between an AGR or a tech, because they're both wearing uniforms and they're both there during the week. M-Day soldiers like myself only came on the weekends, but if you came in the week, Everyone's wearing a uniform. Some are techs, some are ADRs. So I can't tell the difference. I did reach out to some folks, some techs and some AGR folks, to ask about this. And what I heard back is, you want to see a silver lining. What's the silver lining of being a tech as opposed to an AGR? And what one person said is that a tech has more freedom, set hours, comp time, and union representation. And what I heard, I believe, General Kyle, is like the freedom to say no if you're a tech. If you don't want to go somewhere, you're a tech and you get off at 5 and you're done. Whereas if you're AGR, if you're active guard, then you do as you're told. However, I do want to read just a message that I got from one AGR stating that in her department, if folks were changed from AGR to tech, that they would absolutely quit, that there's no way they would do that workload with a decrease in pay and a decrease in benefits. So to really dumb it down, what it sounds like is that we're just basically going to pay people less to do the same job. We're going to have to do the job, and we're going to pay them less and give them less benefits. My question is, is there a way for us to do maybe a committee resolution opposing this? That's my question. And would that be helpful?
I think I can answer that. Absolutely, we will bring something forth here in the near future. What are you doing? Representative Groh?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I want to start out with saying that our state is lucky to have the large numbers of highly dedicated National Guard personnel. And I have known some during my life in Alaska. I represent some now in the legislature. But what I want to go back, and it's a little bit related somewhat to what Representative Carpenter is asking about. Was there a strategy or historical pattern that led to the substantial reliance on people in the National Guard, or personnel in the National Guard, doing these tasks as opposed to active duty? They're some of the more vital tasks, I would say, for our nation's defense. I mean, obviously, National Guard personnel are highly capable, but I'm interested in either the, like I said, the operational decision or historical pattern, whatever led to this being so prominent in Alaska. Through the chair. Thank you, sir.
Through the chair to Representative Groh. So, sir, when you look historically at the Alaska Air National Guard's growth, it started in 1989, which was the fall of the Cold War. When we thought we won, and we started getting rid of missions in the active duty, missions that were held, all of these missions, minus air refueling, were held at some point by active duty forces. As we drew down in the early 90s, the active duty was getting rid of mission and pushing it off to the Guard. So in the case of search and rescue, that happened. The 71st Rescue Squadron left in 1989, and the 210th Rescue Squadron stood up in their place. In 1993, we did that with the Rescue Coordination Center, and we did that with a Detachment 1 at Eielson. ADS came on board, I think, 1996, and then 1986 is when we got the air refueling mission. Yeah. So it was really a drawdown of the Cold War and active duty getting rid of missions that they didn't think we need anymore. The world, the landscape has changed, and those missions are now as important as they were in the 80s, and even more so in some cases. So really, these missions came to us, like I said, at the drawdown of the Cold War, and when they didn't think they needed them anymore. I'm not sure I want to comment if it is a good Guard mission or an active duty should take them back. But the hand I'm dealt right now is the Air National Guard. We do those missions. We do them proudly. Alaska citizens doing those missions, protecting the top of the world, and we like doing those missions. and would like to continue to do those missions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the witness for the response. I don't have any more questions. I just want to join others in this committee to work to address this, which is obviously a major issue that we need to weigh in on. And thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for bringing this to our attention.
Thank you, Representative Grohl. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you for a second bite of the apple here, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, is the PEC leveling expected to surface on the Army side as well?
Through the chair, to Representative Carpenter. No, sir, not at the current time. So the Army went through their own changes. I think about 3 years ago, they did some similar changes, not the same because they're structured differently. But currently, there is no plan for this to push with the Army. There is a plan for the Air, if we don't get the cap removed, to do even more of this. In the future, there are two more phases to this PEC leveling that they're looking at that also need to be scrutinized through mission and through location. There'll be cross PEC leveling, and then there will be ultimately technician leveling throughout the states is the plan. So, but to answer your question, no, sir, there's no plan to do this with the Army at this time.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your white paper, looking at it, says there will be a significant impact, and then lists half a dozen bulleted items. On there is ballistic missile defense, space domain awareness. Does this PEC leveling have a classified impact that you're not able to talk about today?
Through the chair, to Representative Carpenter, yes, sir, it does. There is obviously the more levels we go, the more the effect. I can't comment on those now.
A comment.
Comment, please.
So the list that's listed here is concerning to me, but I can't imagine that the authorities at the highest levels of the Department of Defense are going to allow ballistic missile defense to slip with whatever PEC leveling is happening through NGB. So I would argue that we need to understand what's happening at the national level with regard to force alignment before we get too far in the weeds of championing one way or the other. And that would be my caution.
Thank you, Representative Carpenter. Representative Sandler.
Thank you, through the chair. A question to General Kyle. I appreciate knowing the information. I'm not sure if this puts you at odd with the National Guard Bureau. Have they given you a dispensation to take this case to us? Or I'm not quite sure, because you're kind of putting your neck out a little bit, sir.
Through the chair, to Representative Carpenter. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We have put ourselves at odds with Guard Bureau. We tried to work with them initially, brought up all of our concerns. Unfortunately, they fell on deaf ears. They're happy that they've made more states and territories happy than they've made upset. So they to Guard Bureau, they think that's a win. And yes, we are at odds. We are sticking our necks out. General Sachs definitely has stuck his neck out with the Guard Bureau, and we've had some very spirited conversations with the Director of the Air National Guard and Deputy Director of the Air National Guard. So, yes.
Thank you. Good luck, sir.
Seeing no more questions, that concludes today's agenda. If we have no more business, House Military Veterans Affairs will adjourn at 1:41 p.m.